This episode is brought to you by Intuit QuickBooks Bill Pay. You didn't start a business to spend your Sundays chasing invoices and manual data entry. But as you grow, accounts payable starts to feel like a full-time job you never applied for. Bills pile up, approvals get lost in email, and your vendors are constantly asking, "Where's my check?" It's distracting, it's stressful, and it's keeping you from the work that actually moves the needle. Intuit QuickBooks Bill Pay is the exit ramp. QuickBooks Bill Pay automates the busy work that eats your calendar by bringing every bill, every vendor, and every payment into one organized dashboard. Stop chasing details and start seeing the big picture. Know exactly what's due, who needs to sign off, and how it impacts your cash flow before the money leaves your bank. Vendors can even manage their own details so you stay in control of how and when you pay. Grow with confidence and put your AP on autopilot in QuickBooks. Learn more at quickbooks.com/billpay. Again, that's quickbooks.com/billpay. Terms apply. Money movement services are provided by Intuit Payments, Inc., licensed as a money transmitter by the New York State Department of Financial Services.
¿Quieres mejor internet? Cox Internet de 300 megas tiene las velocidades rápidas y confiables que buscas. Perfecto para streaming y gaming y trabajar desde casa. Yeah. Todo por solo $45 al mes cuando agregas Cox Mobile. Incluye equipo de Wi-Fi y garantía de precio de 2 años en tu plan. Yeah. No esperes. Cámbiate hoy a Cox. Requiere Cox Mobile Gig Unlimited. Garantía de precio no incluye impuestos y cargos. Velocidad de datos móviles se reduce después de 20 gigas al mes.
Hello and what is shaking, everybody? Welcome to the Wind Up Podcast from bright and sunny Southern California. We are doing our little kind of company retreat and getaway this week, and we still need to get an episode out your way. And today we're going to be talking all about planning for the new vintage, the new harvest, all of the happenings that are going to come in a new year, such as 2025. And this is the time of year where we sit down and where, of course, many businesses sit down and figure out what is the best path forward as we start planning for a brand new year. Before we dive into all that, of course, a couple of quick announcements. Please remember to like, subscribe, rate, and review the show. You can do so wherever you're consuming the podcast. You can also follow us on any and all of our social networks at MTGA Wines YouTube, where you can find the video version of the show here. Watch me dance around on the little couch that I'm sitting on. You can also follow us on Instagram, Book of Face, and the social network formerly known as Twitter, at MTGA Wines will be the handle across all of those. We are still brought to you by PremierCrewClothing.com. That's CRUClothing.com. You can still go to that website, use the code Premier for 20% off your first order. We just added a new Aligote All Day shirt because I know many of you are rosé all day people. It's time to graduate to something new, something different, and Aligote is the one you got to go for. Believe me, it is winemaker tested, winemaker approved. Promise you that. Last and certainly not least, for any and all of you that might be looking to do any holiday gifting in terms of the wine side of things, please make sure you get those orders in over the next week or so. Otherwise, the shipping deadlines and cutoffs with UPS and FedEx and all those guys starts to get a little wonky. So if there's anything that you need personally for the holidays, the new year, be sure to let us know. Go to mtgawines.com/shop. You can check out a vertical of Merlot that we currently have available, some magnums that we have for the big parties that are going on during this holiday season. We got what you need. Please be 21 years or older to order. Thank you. Appreciate it. All right. Let's get into it, shall we? So this time of year, this is something that Brittany, the HBIC, and I have done almost every year for the last like 6 or 7 years, maybe 8 years even. Is we come down and kind of get away from Napa for a little bit. It's a great time for us to go through kind of our books, kind of see how the year really shaped up. It's time to kind of wrap a lot of other things up in terms of just logistics and getting ready for the new year that we have coming down the pipeline. It's a lot of planning. It's a lot of how do we think this harvest shook out? What are we looking at and what are we excited about for this new year? It's kind of that, you know, trying to put this nice little bow on top of the madness that comes, you know, post-harvest and travel and all the other things. This week is really kind of the first time that we get in like 3 or 4 months to just relax and actually get a lot of the work done that we need to, that we've kind of been putting off for months because we just haven't had the time, plain and simple, and haven't been around the valley, at least in any kind of capacity outside of harvest, especially through the month of November, doing like sales trips and being on the road, all that other stuff. So this is really kind of that time to be very, very reflective and look forward to see what's going on. Now, in a lot of the episodes over the last like few months, and actually kind of throughout the year, we've certainly talked a lot about kind of the trials and tribulations of, you know, a lack of tourism, you know, business slowing down, sales slowing down throughout the alcohol industry, not just the world of wine. You know, we're seeing a huge dip in tourism around Napa Valley. We're seeing younger generations not be as involved or as interested in wine necessarily. You're seeing older generations and, you know, bigger generations in terms of just the number of people, you know, start to consume less or move away from wine towards other things. We're seeing Napa become more and more exclusive and expensive and less accessible for a lot of people. And these are kind of the big, like overarching, like 36,000 foot view, like issues that we see. And there are a lot of us in this industry that are just still trying to figure out, how do we deal with this? When you have a tough year like this, can you actually get through it? Number one. Number two, if you're getting through it, how are you adjusting? How are you evolving? What are you going to be doing differently in the new year to try and get better or capitalize on maybe some of the challenges that you're facing? Because this is, you know, something that I think any of us who have had employees or had to manage people is that, you know, we try and teach folks to be solution oriented, right? Don't come at me with a bunch of problems. Anybody can bitch and moan and complain as long as they possibly want. What I really want to know is that if you have an issue, what is your plan? How are you going to move forward? What are you going to be doing differently? How can you take this issue that you found and turn it into something positive? And that was a lot of what we talked about a couple episodes ago in terms of kind of the downturn of like sales and business and kind of what the positive outcomes could be, in that you're seeing a lot of potentially pretenders in the valley where it's more of a passion project, maybe not even a passion project, but just a business asset maybe, or maybe it's just very fashionable to be in the wine industry and they're seeing how tough it is to actually do what we do and have a fully functioning business and have something that actually pays the bills and for itself. And you're seeing a lot of these folks, I think, ask a lot of these questions. Now, there are certainly plenty of people, especially in Napa in this day and age, where money isn't really an issue. You know, if you're a billionaire with a capital B and you have this little wine thing that you spend a couple $1 million a year on, is that really going to, you know, move the needle for you in one direction or the other? Can it just be the passion project and operate a loss and be great for your, you know, tax reporting? I don't know. Or do you have that same individual who is, you know, a serial entrepreneur who wants this, no matter how small the business might be in the grand scheme of their assets, that they really want it to be successful, that they want to see growth, that they want to see it at least be profitable and pay for itself because they don't want it to be operating at a loss? Maybe. I know a couple of folks that are in that boat for sure. But I think there's a lot of people right now that are facing kind of the doom and gloom of a lot of inventory that they haven't been able to sell through. They're looking at rising costs. You know, this is something that's great about this trip for me personally, is I go back through and I do a lot of, you know, deep diving into our bank statements, our revenue streams, you know, our expenses, and I see exactly where money is going. Is it in line with what we've done in past years? It's basically just running a profit and loss statement as we reconcile our accounts and saying like, okay, like where are the things that have financially made this year more challenging? Where could we potentially make cuts next year? Where could we spend more and actually get more, you know, out of these certain segments of our business? So there's a lot of that stuff that you need to do. And I think there are a lot of wineries at this point that are kind of shaking in their boots a little bit, trying to figure out, you know, costs are not going down, plain and simple. As much as we talked about the Napa grape market over this season and how affordable fruit became as we got into harvest, everything else is going up. You know, we just got quotes for our bottling run come February, and our glass prices are up another 30%. What are you going to do? Our cork prices are relatively the same. They've gone up a little bit over the last year or 2 years, but not crazy. You know, we're in a position right now, like for us, we don't have any red wine contracts signed next year. We purposefully kind of let things kind of play themselves out this year, given where the grape market was, and we're gonna be kind of holding on and saying like, okay, we're going to probably not sign contracts as early as we did this year, because we want to see how the grape market shakes out. Are we going to be able to find really great fruit at a really great price? Or is there just not going to be a lot of fruit available? Are people going to be in a buying mood come this winter or spring? Or are they going to be holding on saying, all right, you know what? We have a lot of wine to sell. We don't have a really big burn rate going on right now. We've got some catch up to do. Maybe we don't bring in as much fruit next year. Maybe we don't make as much wine this next year. Kind of anything and everything is on the table for a lot of people. So that's kind of where these conversations are starting for us, for a lot of other wineries. It's where colleagues and friends of ours, where, you know, what we've done around fire pits and dinners, and even in a place like this where we're kind of getting away for a few days, but traveling with some friends, it's where we're talking a lot of shop and trying to troubleshoot and kind of figure out what is the best way forward, not just for maybe our brands, but also our industry as a whole. What are the major challenges that we're seeing, and how could we possibly address them? So let's try and tackle a few of them. Let's sit here and try and solve the world's problems as we look forward to wrapping up this year over the next couple of weeks and kicking off 2025 in the best way we possibly can. So number one, let's dive into kind of, I think, the big question on a lot of wineries' minds. And we even heard some, you know, not great news from other folks this morning that, you know, folks are, you know, letting hospitality staff go because business is down. We're not seeing as much tourism. There's not as many events and revenue driving events specifically happening out on the road, especially as we get into what is typically a slower part of the year. You're seeing people cut back on staff because sales are down, and having a full-time or maybe even a part-time salesperson doesn't make as much sense right now. So if that's the result of a lack of tourism and perhaps maybe saturation, you know, in different cities and locales around the country, what's the solution there? And I think this is, you know, where you just naturally see kind of a contraction of a particular market, right? That if there is an oversupply and not enough demand, right, you can't just keep flooding the market with wine events, with new vintages, with boatloads of wine that are going to go nowhere fast. I think as much as it might pain some of us as we move into 2025, I think there are going to be a lot of us, and this is something that is on the table for our labels for sure, is that we're going to make less wine. In fact, we already did a little bit of that this year, where we cut production back, not a lot, but enough, knowing that we had slowing sales and a lot of wine to sell from what was a really big year in 2023 and a pretty solid year in 2022. There's a lot of wine we have stored in our warehouse that's ready to make its way out into the world. But right now, we're probably, you know, 4-ish months, maybe even 6 months, kind of behind what our normal burn rate should be. We're pretty long on inventory right now. And that's not necessarily a bad thing. I mean, for us, quite honestly, for like our style of wine, that only works to our advantage because our wines get better as time goes on. I will gladly hold back wines for an additional few months to see how they continue to evolve over the months and years that come. So for us, it's less of an issue. Except, of course, that if you have a lot of these big contracts with grape growers, maybe you're already kind of ironing out how many barrels and things you need, kind of your two biggest cost centers for any wine business are your grapes and your barrels, plain and simple. If those are already, you know, locked in and you already have stuff kind of on the docket, you might be behind a little bit of an eight ball, because now you're on the hook for a lot of stuff that you don't necessarily need. So when I mentioned earlier that, you know, we don't have any of our big red wine contracts signed right now, that is only trying to play to our advantage of saying, hey, we're in a position where we have a lot of wine to sell. And if we're that roughly 4 to 6 months kind of behind where we need to be, that means I've got some buffer time to figure out, like, hey, how much fruit do we actually want to bring in this next year? Do we need to bring in Cabernet Franc again? Do we want to make more Cabernet Sauvignon? Do we want to reduce how much of that we're making? You know, as much as I want to continue, you know, being known for the Merlot that you, many of you have probably come to know and love, and many of our fans kind of latch on to, is it going to be worthwhile to even make that this year? And that's the big question. So I think where a lot of wineries that kind of find themselves in this position where they're going to be entering contract negotiations when they're looking at the fruit they're going to be purchasing, the barrels that they're going to need as a result, a lot of us are slow playing. And we're saying, let's get through the end of this year. Let's get through Q1 even, and let's see what business is looking like. If we're still seeing a relatively significant downturn and sales continue to slow and we continue to see this contraction and kind of, you know, recession within the industry, then this might be just that shot across the bow you need to say like, hey, now's a good time to back off what we're doing a little bit and not get out over our skis. You don't want to be in a position where you're just way over leveraged and you end up having to fold. I think that's where some wine businesses get into a lot of trouble. You know, that's allegedly what happened with a company like Vintage Wine Estates, where, you know, theoretically, and this is kind of the rumor, I don't think anyone's been able really to confirm this, but, you know, they just got over leveraged. They took on a ton of debt. Interest rates went up, business slowed down, and they ended up in a really bad financial spot. So for those of us that have this flexibility right now to kind of slow play things and say, let's see how this market actually shakes out over the next 4 months, is only going to benefit our businesses. It's actually a really huge positive for us. And that is something that I think cannot be understated. So as challenging as this year has been for some of us, and as we look forward to 2025, how challenging it could continue to be, I think there are a good amount of people that are in very good positions to be ultra responsible and conservative in how they act as a business and ensure that they actually get to continue operating into the future. This is something that Brittany and I discussed at length last night as we were having dinner of, you know, if we don't have these contracts signed and we're not necessarily on the hook for all this fruit, that means we don't have to buy as many new barrels. It means we don't have to, you know, spend the money on glass and corks and foils as much as we would need to when we have to bottle those wines. There's a lot of other expenses that come down the pipeline when you, after you bring in those grapes, as you might imagine. And it might just be a perfect time to be like, hey, let's contract a little bit as well. Let's make a little bit less wine. And let's make sure that we don't get out over our skis. That is kind of where a lot of people are figuring things out. And we'll see. We'll see how it actually shakes down. Now, in terms of driving more business, and let's just take the kind of tourism in Napa issue, where Napa is seeing, you know, less people. There's less of a reason to have hospitality staff, some, you know, large hospitality teams right now for certain places because it's just been so slow. You see a lot of folks that are, you know, hurting because their direct business is just not where it should be. In fact, that's where kind of we're in the biggest bind. And I don't want to say this is like a huge bind, but it's challenging for us because very typically, you know, less than, you know, maybe 2%, maybe 3% of our business last year was through like wholesale, like distribution, wine shops and restaurants. This year, it's closer to about 8%. It's a pretty significant jump. And many of you have heard me talk about kind of the margin game that you have to play in distribution. But for those of you that maybe haven't, the game you have to play as a result is you're discounting your wine, typically at least at half off, to these distributors to sell it, which means your margins get cut down significantly rather than, say, going through your mailing list or your wine club and selling directly to you, the consumer. As a result, the volume you need to do to make your business make sense is a lot higher, because if you're making $1 a bottle versus $5 or $10 a bottle, right? If you
Hi, my name is Mira Patasin. I'm an author and I'm an activist, and GoFundMe is my go-to platform for fundraising. The first GoFundMe I did was to raise money for a chapbook or a collection of poetry and essays and short stories. So we started a GoFundMe and our goal was $7,000. What I've learned is so special about GoFundMe is that it's a whole collection of people offering anything from like $4 to $400. And each time you get a ping that someone donated, even if it is just $4, it's so exciting. So if you have a goal and you get there, you can keep making it bigger and bigger and bigger. We did go past our goal. It was amazing.
GoFundMe is the world's number one fundraising platform trusted by over 200 million people. Start your GoFundMe today at GoFundMe.com. That's GoFundMe.com. GoFundMe.com.
¿Quieres mejor internet? Cox Internet de 300 megas tiene las velocidades rápidas y confiables que buscas. Perfecto para streaming y gaming y trabajar desde casa. Todo por solo $45 al mes cuando agregas Cox Mobile. Incluye equipo de Wi-Fi y garantía de precio de 2 años en tu plan. No esperes. Cámbiate hoy a Cox. Requiere Cox Mobile Gig Unlimited. Garantía de precio no incluye impuestos y cargos. Velocidad de datos móviles se reduce después de 20 gigas al mes.
Going to have to do 5 or 10x in sales to actually make that make sense, potentially. So you have to kind of keep that in mind as well, is that even if you go through a different sales channel, yes, it is money in the bank, and that is probably more important than anything else in a tough year like this. But is that actually going to be sustainable long term? This is another conversation we've had over the last couple of days with a great friend and sales guy who works a lot more on the wholesale and restaurant retail side. Is that in these tough years, money in the bank is, cash is king. You got to keep the lights on. You got to keep things moving forward. So even if the margins suck, at least you're selling wine. Our wholesale business, like we were saying, has grown 4 or 5x over the last year. It has been very, very advantageous because without that money in the bank right now, we would have folded this fall. Plain and simple. We would have been out of business. We would not have been able to pay some of our great bills. Barrel bills, we would have been in a lot of trouble. So we had to adapt, we had to overcome. And as we look forward to 2025, and assuming that tourism continues to kind of be rocky in the Napa area, can we put a little bit more effort on that wholesale channel, sell a little bit more wine, and kind of make up a little bit of that difference? Maybe we don't, grow a whole lot more in that, but if we do another couple of percent of sales through that channel, it could work out really, really well and help kind of float us while the industry resets. But even more importantly, to small businesses and wine businesses like ours is that direct business. It's you guys in wine clubs and on mailing lists and in allocations that are the ones that really do support us and keep us afloat. So if we're seeing those level out or decline, what can you do, right? What's the issue? Could it be pricing people out? We've talked a lot about how expensive it is to make wine in Napa these days. Our costs have gone up double digits every single year. In 21 and 2022, we're talking 30-40% or more. And still, I think last year our costs were up another 12 or 13. This year it's looking to be about the same. So we're continuing to see costs rise. And of course, that gets factored into the price of the bottles that we're making. So is Napa getting to a point where it is just so expensive to make these wines that it's pricing out the overwhelming majority of people, of wine drinkers and potential new wine drinkers, right? Because if you think of like a Gen Z coming up, they're in their mid to late 20s right now. Some of them are potentially getting into wine. They don't necessarily have a lot of buying power. They're not buying 125, 175 dollar bottles of Napa Cab just yet. But by the time they get to that buying power, are those bottle prices going to be at $225, $275? Like, are you going to see these big increases and people just get priced out of the market? Now, if that's the case, and we see kind of the expense of Napa really inhibiting direct sales, which I think that could be very, very well could be an issue. The good but kind of tough thing that we encounter, of course, is the contraction. Right, and the correction that we see is that if you have a lot of these brands that are currently operating and they're paying top dollar for all these consultants, all these barrels, all these operations, and they start to get out over their skis like we were talking about, what do? You either have to find that demand and sell through what you have, or you start playing discounting games. You start offloading this wine to wherever you can to keep cash flow coming in. And if there's less demand and an oversupply, theoretically, you would see prices start to come down. And we did talk about this, with kind of the grape pricing conversation we had a couple of months ago, regarding the big changes in the price per ton of Cabernet at the beginning of the year versus, around harvest. was like a $3,000 difference per ton. And there were thousands of tons available in Napa at, you know, at least a 30% discount, if not more. Right. So the obvious, you know, assumption is like, oh, well, you're seeing a lot of people pay a lot less for this fruit. The wines should be a lot less. But that's not necessarily the case. As I mentioned, like our glass costs are going up 30% next year. So if you're continuing to see other facets of the wine industry rising costs between farming, glass, operations, whatever the case may be, it's not necessarily going to, you know, like the grape costs aren't going to decrease enough to see a precipitous drop in bottle price, right? But if you're hard up for cash and you're long on inventory and it's the decision to, you know, discount your wine versus go out of business, that might be the case. You saw a lot of people do that in 2008 through 2011 when the recession hit. There were a lot of people that were going through the same issue. And a lot of people started playing the discount games, doing case specials, shipping specials, anything and everything they could do. Of course, the long-term ramifications of that is that once you start discounting, you really can't stop. You've officially kind of reset your brand image and value and pricing after just a few short weeks or a couple of months. So when it comes to kind of driving these sales and more direct business or wholesale business or whatever the case is, you have to be very, very strategic with whatever strategy you employ, because it could end up hurting you even more in the long run. But on the other side of that coin, of course, it might actually keep you afloat. Now, when it comes to attracting more people to Napa, you know, and having people visit more wineries, how do we go about that? How do we make Napa more enticing? And I'm of the opinion that it is, frankly, a big problem with the county and the rules and regulations that are in place, where wineries are governed by a winery ordinance that was produced 30 years ago and was very advantageous for certain people who helped push it through, and is less advantageous for the overwhelming majority of wineries that are now operating. So there has to be a local shift in politics and rules and regulation in order for Napa to continue to grow. I'm a huge proponent of that. If you've seen anything that Lindsay Hoops has gone through over recent years, that Stu Smith at Smith Madrone has talked about over the years, there's a lot of issues where, surprisingly enough, a lot of Napa County is anti-tourism, anti-winery, anti-business. St. Helena, where I was born and raised, is very much that. They don't want it to grow and thrive. They want this nice, sleepy little town. And what people don't understand is, like, the reason you have this beautiful, sleepy little town is because people want to visit it. The storefronts, the restaurants, they stay busy, they stay in operation because people are coming here. We need to continue to attract and encourage people to come to this beautiful place we call home. And I feel as though between the prices of hotel rooms in particular, you know, it becomes cost prohibitive. Now, when you start to see, again, this contraction and less people coming out, it creates more competition. Because if you're not, obviously, if there's this, again, oversupply and not enough demand, typically, in theory, you would see prices contract because you're trying to entice more people. So as tough as it is right now and could be for the next year, 2 years even, you may see Napa become more accessible because places are going to need to either attract more people and find ways to do that, you know, whether that's through discounting like we talked about or specials or whatever the case is, or they're just going to have to be way more frugal and reduce their costs so they can charge less for their product or service or whatever they're providing. So as tough as it is right now, I think if a lot of these businesses and these kind of the expense of Napa continues to be an issue, that is something that could recede as well. Because if we don't see the uptick in business and sales and all these other things, people are going to have to adjust. They're going to have to re-strategize and kind of reformat how they do things. So for those of you who are consumers and visitors to Napa, in the next few years, it might be the best time you've ever seen to come out our way, because there's just going to be great opportunities to be had. And that could be in the form of some of these specials and discounts and just lower pricing in general, particularly when it comes to like the travel expenses. We're talking, you know, hotel rooms, concierge services, you know, dining, even potentially, car services and transportation, I think you're going to see it get more competitive. So hopefully in the coming years, as we kind of troubleshoot a lot of this, maybe it's not a huge precipitous drop in prices, but hopefully it gets better. Hopefully it gets more competitive. Hopefully you start to see this correction and this contraction do some good for the industry. And make no mistake, there's going to be great opportunities to be had. And I think this is really kind of the main point I want to end on, is that we mentioned kind of the billionaires with the B that come in and kind of, want the fashionable lifestyle of Napa and owning a wine business. And that's nice and all. And this is something that I still preach to this day, that as long as we are a very welcoming industry, we're very, very collaborative. It's a great community to be a part of. But if you're not the one coming out, shaking hands, kissing babies, making yourself known, if you're not a part of that community, then it's really tough for any of us to support you, much less consumers. And I think, and maybe some of you who, aren't in the wine industry but love wine would agree with this, is that it is, I think, getting more and more important that you get to know the businesses and the people behind those businesses in this day and age. There's a level of authenticity that I think is becoming more and more of a requirement. You can't just be some rich guy or gal that dives into the wine industry because you're passionate about it. That's the story of a huge amount of brands and labels out there. What does this industry actually mean to you? Why do you really want to be a part of it? Do you actually have a story? Do you have something that people can connect with? Can you tie into some sort of emotion that is going to encourage people to come into your world and enjoy your wines for what they are? Or are you just selling high-end Napa Cab because high-end Napa Cab is popular right now? I think that this is where we're going to see the most issues within the industry, and it's also where I think certain brands are going to have the most trouble, is that I think there has been an overwhelming trend, and this is something that started a couple of years ago, but I think it's only picking up more steam, is that people are looking for that story, that authenticity, and that personal connection. It's why, and Brittany and I get this question all the time, is, why don't you grow? Why don't you get bigger? Why don't you try and distribute your wines around the country more and more and more? You should be everywhere. These wines are great. And we say, oh, well, that is, but at a certain point, if we continue to grow at that rate, none of you would get to know us. None of you would get to connect with us personally. You wouldn't get to shake our hand, sit in our cellar, and taste our wines with us, whether that was at the winery or on the road during some sort of event. It is outrageously important to us that we get to talk to and meet everybody in our mailing list, on our wine club, at our events personally. That is the number one most important thing to us, because those relationships are the things that have allowed us to continue, producing the wines that we make, doing the events that we want to do, supporting the causes that we want to support. And I think there are far too many wineries right now that are just doing it because they can and not because they have any real purpose within the industry. There's a lot of great wine to be consumed out there. It's pretty hard to find a bad wine in Napa. Some of you, and those of us, we disagree on a few labels, of course. But the reality is that with so many options readily available, why would you choose ours or someone else's over anything else? And my answer to that, 10 out of 10 times, is the connection. It's the personal connection. Yeah, maybe you don't like our wine as much as you like another brand. And this is, people have said this. They're like, we like your wines. We still have other wines that we love to enjoy, but we keep your wine around because we know you guys and we want to see you succeed. And we've built a personal friendship and connection with many people, that have been supporters of our labels. And I think that that's something that every winery right now, if they don't have it, they're scrambling to figure out how, or they're blissfully unaware that this is even an issue. And there are many of us that are continuing to really focus in on these relationships and say, hey, you know, this is why you should support us. This is why, you know, we connect. This is why we're friends. This is why you're not just another client that comes through our door. I'm not just trying to upsell you on the next wine release that we have. There's a reason why. For years, you know, it's easy to get a hold of us where you can shoot us a text and be like, hey, Mike, we're thinking of opening up this vintage tonight. What do you think about it? How's it tasting right now? And people do that. And that's what we want to provide to people. We want to provide an outrageous amount of value as winemakers and owners and bring you into our world as much as we can. It was a big reason for even starting this podcast in the first place, is trying to bring people into our world and connect with wine in a way that maybe you haven't been able to in the past. So I think the upside of kind of all the trials and tribulations that we've talked about and kind of touched on, you know, we're going to see things shake out, of course, in some way, shape, or form. If I had a crystal ball that I could shake really, really well right now and tell you how it's going to sort out, I would, but we don't. So we plan the best we can. We talk a lot of shop. We take a lot of things into consideration, like we were talking about earlier in the show. And from there, we try and do the best we can with what we got. And we try and get a good gauge for where the wind is blowing and how we can catch that and ride it until the next evolution has to happen. All right. It has been an excellent episode. I hope that is somewhat informative and interesting, kind of on, you know, the considerations that we take into account in tough years like this, in planning for a new year like next year, and where kind of the state of the industry is, and hopefully it kind of gives you some insight on kind of how we, you know, consider our colleagues and how we want to be operating and how many of us want to be operating within this industry. Because like we were saying, there's a lot of great options for great wine out there. Supporting the brands and the labels and specifically the people that you connect with is becoming, I think, more and more prevalent and something that needs to be a main focus. And hopefully there are a lot of people in our cohort that agree with that, because if they don't, or they're just not paying enough attention to that, they're going to end up left in the dust. Hope you all have an amazing rest of your day, rest of your week. Thank you so much for tuning in to the Wind Up Podcast. Signing off for now. We will see you next week for another episode. Be sure to follow us on all of our social networks at MTGA Wines. That's YouTube, Instagram, where we're the most active. The social network formerly known as Twitter, the Book of Face. Be sure to like, subscribe, rate, and review the show, and head to premiercrewclothing.com. Use the code PREMIER during checkout to get your 20% off your first order. Cheers, and have a great one.
You're listening to a podcast right now. Driving, working out, walking the dog. If you're into podcasts, chances are you have something to say too. With RSS.com, starting your own podcast is free and easy. Upload an episode and we distribute it to Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Amazon Music, and more. Track your listeners, see where they're from, and start earning from ads just like this. If you've been thinking about starting a podcast, this is your sign. Start your new podcast for free today at RSS.com.